From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris.
I'm Robert Siegel, and it's Thursday, the day we read from your comments.
And we'll start with this, about my interview with television producer Paul Mason. His documentary, The Reunion, featured children from the 1960s who grew up in a unique integrated community outside of Cleveland.
I listened with great empathy, writes Carol Leslie Hargis of Dallas, Texas. Several comments were reminiscent of the experience of my daughters, now 13 and 15. We chose to send them to a school where half of the students hail from a black neighborhood. We were confident that we would bring them up colorblind girls, and the plan worked great. However, she continues, like students in the show, our rude awakening came when our oldest graduated to junior high school and discovered that race is a huge issue. It's sad to find so much hatred and suspicion still exist, even in children two generations removed from the desegregation efforts of the 1960s.
Our series on the history of the Middle East and the West brought these comments, but first a correction. Yesterday we said the Ottoman siege of Vienna was in 1686. The siege actually occurred in 1683.
Joshua Cloner of Monterey Park, California writes, I think it would have been instructive for you to have mentioned that the Crusaders, before they left Europe, began by slaughtering scores of local Jews. While this does not tie in directly to your report, the fact that there are still Jews in the Middle East might be relevant.
And this from Zach Johnson of Portland, Oregon. Your coverage of the Crusades suggests that Europe is to blame for the start of hostilities between Islam and Christianity. You would have a far different story if instead of starting your history in the 11th century, you had started your history with the Muslim assault on North Africa and Western Europe. Egypt, Tunisia, and Spain were all predominantly Christian nations taken over by invading armies in the 8th century. The he-hit-me-first level of arguments between the two cultures may make historical conflicts largely meaningless at this point anyway, but you should tell the whole story before trying to make one of the children apologize to the other.
Tony Perrottet's comments that Playboy photos of female Olympic athletes are in the spirit of ancient Olympic nudity caught the ears of a number of listeners.
My husband and I listened slack-jawed, writes Mary Matthews of Athens, Georgia. Though his face grew redder, we were both grinning from ear to ear to hear the realistic thrill of the early Olympics. It's delightful to be reminded that the celebration of the human form has challenged folks for years, and that sexual allure of athletes is not new just because it's put on paper in an adult magazine. Bravo for broadcasting a slightly bawdy but historically accurate description of the games.
Quite a different response from Donna Ziak in Seattle, Washington.
She writes, female athletes posing in the nude for Playboy is not an indication of sexual maturity in our culture. The day that male athletes feel they have to sexually exploit themselves in order to get ahead in our society is the day I will not have an issue with women choosing to pose nude for magazines. Until that time, they participate in the continued objectification of all women, and that is not progress. I think even the Greek philosophers might have agreed.
And finally, praise for Misha's series Creative Spaces and her interview with actress Felicia Rashad. Tim Bauer of Madison, Wisconsin writes, listening to the rich laughter and playful repartee between the two women was, in Simone de Beauvoir's words, the magic of the mirror. Ms. Rashad embodies the soul of wisdom, of accomplished and accepted serenity and grace.
Send us your thoughts, even if they're not that nice. Write to us at atc@npr.org. And don't forget to tell us how to pronounce your name and where you're from.